take full responsibility for everything this government has been doing in tackling coronavirus, and I'm very proud of our record.
Tens of thousands of our citizens have died avoidably. These were unnecessary deaths because of systematic government misconduct.
With good British common sense, we will continue to defeat this virus and take this country forward.
There are a lot of green shoots of opportunity on the horizon. You know, we've been held down on the forest floor for far too long, and we will reach that canopy again.
Hello, you're listening to Bloomberg Westminster, your daily guide to British politics, and what a day it's going to be for British politics. I'm Sebastian Salik.
And I'm Roger Hearing. Very good afternoon to you. The reason it's an important day, of course, is because Rishi Sunak is going to be speaking quite shortly. We reckon about half an hour, 40 minutes. He's going to be talking about what he's going to do to try and sort out the UK economy after the difficulties from COVID, of course. Also, I think Brexit perhaps hovering in the background. He's going to be announcing, we think, a multi-billion pound package to get people back into work. He says the focus needs to be on curbing the impact of the COVID-19 crisis.
Providing the funds we need for the health response, whether that's test and trace, mass testing, vaccines, the NHS, or indeed protecting people's jobs, businesses and livelihoods. But you will also see us getting on with delivering on what we were elected to do, which is invest in public services and invest in infrastructure.
Jobs, jobs, jobs seems to be the focus for the government then, but there are going to be some people who go home empty-handed. There have been reports that the Chancellor is considering freezing pay for all public sector workers, or most public sector workers, excluding frontline NHS staff. That's something that's been widely criticised by unions. Earlier on, we spoke to Paul Novak, who's Deputy General Secretary at the TUC, who said strike action could happen.
Somehow low-paid workers are going to be asked to pick up the bill for the pandemic. I mean, there's rumours alongside the public sector pay freeze that the government won't implement an increase in the national minimum wage. Again, this would hit those who can least afford to take a real-terms pay cut the hardest.
That's Paul Novak, Deputy General Secretary at the TUC. Let's bring in Bloomberg's Managing Editor for Politics, Flavia Krause-Jackson. Flavia, thanks for being back with us. Now, what are you expecting to hear from the Chancellor?
I mean, it's going to be an incredibly tricky balancing act that he has to pull off. It sort of feels that we've been in I don't know how many sort of budget situations, and now we have this. There'll be a couple of things really to be looking out for, and one is the ones that you've sort of brought up already, what is going to be happening to the public sector pay. This will bring to mind for many voters and people, you know, memories of austerity, which the Tories said they would be done with. So how he manages to sort of essentially deliver that kind of bad news, and how he does, it's going to be extremely important, and we can expect the opposition to pounce. You know, the argument he will likely make is that the public sector has, the workers have been in a way more sheltered than the private sector, which has been completely hammered by the pandemic. But whether that case will actually sort of really convince voters is an entirely different matter. And the other thing I think really to look out for is the issue of foreign aid, which is extremely delicate for many Tories. You know, that is a symbol of global Britain and the kind of sort of image they want to project. If that gets cut, there's already been tensions between Rob and Sunak. And of course, the infrastructure package, which will merit it, you know, its own parenthesis.
But Flavia, I think it'd be fair to say that today it's very much about deferring the really difficult decisions. We're still in crisis mode, and the government seems to be reflecting that with a spending package rather than really starting to rein stuff in.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, to be honest, Johnson is getting it on all sides, partly the messaging, the sort of very confused tiering system that has got people in his own party up in arms. We're all going to be looking very closely at any kind of hint he might be giving on taxes, on like how is he going to pay for all of this. And that is really an important question that, you know, in spite of the spending review, there is the sort of unavoidable question that the public finances are in a state of absolute disarray. The national debt exceeds 100% of gross domestic product. I mean, and at some point there might be a hint in there of how he plans to eventually sort of rein in the deficit.
All right, Flavia, thanks so much for being with us. Flavia Krause-Jackson there, Bloomberg's Managing Editor for Politics. Well, let's bring in a politician, Drew Hendry, SNP MP for Inverness and the party's business spokesman, joins us now. Drew, thanks for being with us. Welcome to the programme. We heard from Flavia perhaps what's expected in this statement. What would you like to hear?
Well, it's absolutely vital that the Chancellor uses the opportunity of the spending review to bring in a major stimulus package. We're calling on the Chancellor to look at a £98 billion fiscal stimulus package to get things moving. What you're hearing in all the reports from the people who are speaking this morning, the one I've just listened to as well, is that there is a systemic economic crisis that's being carried forward into, you know, what looks like an increasingly chaotic Brexit situation. And we need to have that in place to make sure that we're protecting jobs and creating new ones. We also want to see, you know, people at the very lowest end of the pay scales, and indeed people who are having to get by on universal credit, being treated fairly. The government should be maintaining the £20 a week uplift. And the fact that they brought it in at all was an admission that universal credit wasn't enough to live on. And the idea of taking it away is just wrong-headed. So they need to be continuing that. And we want to see the NHS get more funding, bringing up to the levels of Scottish funding. And of course, that will not only benefit England and Wales, but also the knock-on effect for the Barnett formula means we can spend another £4 billion more on the NHS here in Scotland.
Drew, good to have you. A £90 billion stimulus is quite headline-grabbing, and it certainly dwarfs what we're expecting to hear from the Chancellor today. Yep. Of course, you wouldn't put that figure up without having some sort of plan to pay for it, even over a very long-term basis. What would you recommend in terms of knowing that that money can eventually be paid back?
Well, you know, look, there's a number of different ways of doing this. We know that borrowing costs are, you know, incredibly low at the moment. But we also know that the government is largely also borrowing from its own bank, the Bank of England. So there's no real excuse for not making sure that financial stimulus is in there in order to get us through these extraordinary times. And not only because of the pandemic, but the extraordinary situation that the UK Tory government have created over Brexit. And we see a leaked cabinet document today, you know, talking about this getting even worse because of their you know, the incredibly bad handling of the situation. We were always against this situation occurring in the first place, but they've taken a bad situation and made it into a potential disaster. The leaked documents today are talking about disruption to food supply chains and a major economic hit. And in fact, I believe the governor of the Bank of England even said that this could be worse than the worst impact than COVID. So they've got to take bold decisions. They should be taking bold decisions. We've called for that today. They've got the wherewithal to do it. There is no real excuse for not doing that.
But where does boldness shade into, well, foolishness, some might say, because the thing with the national debt, Drew, is it is national. I mean, your Barnett formula or whatever, it's a debt that's going to come on everybody, including people in Scotland. It's got to be thought about.
Yeah, you know, the thing that people never acknowledge is that people in Scotland pay their taxes into this as well. You're absolutely correct. But let's look at the fact that the Chancellor said he was going to put £350 billion into, you know, supporting, you know, the COVID emergency. And I think there's still about £270 billion of that hasn't actually been allocated. So, you know, this isn't, you know, something that's not doable. This is within the Chancellor's gift to do it. And in fact, it's within the budgets that he's already set out for tackling this crisis. What we're asking for is a sensible but bold response to make sure that we can not only, you know, keep people in jobs just now. Don't forget, his mucking about over furlough has meant that nearly over three quarters of a million people have lost their jobs needlessly in this crisis. The fact is that he really needs to get a grip now, make sure he's making those decisions to allow people across the UK, the nations of the UK, particularly in Scotland, to take advantage of the fact that we can have a strong green recovery from this and get into creating good jobs for the future and take a different course.
But does it not mean at some point a return to austerity is going to be necessary? If all of that money gets spent, even if it's justified, even if you can borrow now, we're going to have to make it back.
Well, look, unemployment is absolutely nuts. People talk about austerity and how you're going to pay for this. Well, if you've got people out of work, they can't pay taxes. Your tax base actually disappears because those people aren't able to contribute. They become a weight on that entire situation. We need to be able to create jobs so that we can increase the tax base so that when it comes time to pay for this, so there are the people there to do it. And in the meantime, what we should be doing is focusing on those companies that for far too long have been evading and avoiding their tax responsibilities while other people have been paying theirs. So there's a real opportunity to take a different view just now, that creating more mass unemployment makes absolutely no sense and goes nowhere towards solving that problem of repaying anything.
I guess in the end, Drew, this comes down to being able to balance the books, certainly, but as you say, trying to keep the economy going. In Scotland, I mean, you know, you have to some extent a control over how things work there and the lockdown and that impact on the economy. Is it time perhaps to ease up earlier in Scotland than maybe the other areas as a way of trying to get the economy going again?
No, we'll continue as Nicola Sturgeon's done. I don't think she's taken a day off. But day after day, she's been out there explaining to people why we're following the scientific and clinical guidance that we are in order to get people through this crisis. And that's what she'll continue to do. Obviously, there are some things that have to be done in order to make sure people are going along with that and that we're taking people with us on that journey. But in terms of supporting business, you're absolutely right. The Scottish Government has done more than the Barnett consequentials that have been sent to us through the through the mechanism at Westminster. But what we need is some simple changes which have been denied. We've been calling for months and months and months for the UK government to allow Scotland to make tiny technical changes to borrowing powers so that Scotland can do more ourselves here to actually assist these businesses.
Let's have a look at what else is making news in the world of politics. And Roger, we start with the United Kingdom being united over Christmas.
Yes, it's a rare thing, but you have meant that the England, Scottish, Wales and Northern Ireland administrations all come together to sort out Christmas, relaxing some virus restrictions over the holiday period. What it amounts to is three households will be allowed to form a festive bubble for 5 days. That's between the 23rd and the 27th of December. Cabinet Office Minister Michael Gove says travel restrictions will also be eased. But he went on afterwards to say that this was something they needed to stick with responsibly in order to keep it going. But the extended bubble won't apply in bars or restaurants, something that's angered the sector. And doctors are warning about the impact on the cases, Seb.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't know, but I'm told that for some, Christmas is rather a boozy affair. And I'm sure the industry isn't too happy either about not being able to serve as many people as it would like over that time. We did get a warning, though, quite a stark warning from Professor Andrew Hayward, who's a member of SAGE, who's ripped into the government for relaxing these restrictions. He said the move is effectively throwing fuel on the COVID fire. He said that relaxed restrictions would lead to increased transmission and a third wave of infections, with hospitals being overrun and more unnecessary deaths. No doubt that will come in for some criticism, as we've seen with previous expert warnings around what was eventually the second wave.
Indeed. Meanwhile, London, which tier is it going to be in? Well, the London Mayor, Sadiq Khan, is pushing for the capital to avoid the toughest tier of restrictions when England's lockdown ends next week. He wants the government to keep London in tier two. Sadiq Khan says that would allow the hospitality venues to stay open. Ministers are going to announce which regions are placed in which tiers tomorrow.
Yeah, and interestingly, the Tory mayoral candidate, Sean Bailey, also is calling for tier two, putting a bit of pressure on the government there. Could set up for a bit of a clash between him and Number 10 if that doesn't come to pass. And then we're going to tell you about that report that Drew Henry alluded to earlier, the National Audit Office publishing a damning report into the government's handling of PPE early in the pandemic. We all remember it. The picture it paints is of inadequate stockpiles, difficulties distributing PPE, a lack of information on just how much was needed throughout the country. So that means between February and July of this year, the government spent £12.5 billion on PPE, the price of which had also increased dramatically. And that alone has cost the taxpayer around £10 billion, according to the NAO. We also heard from the Shadow Health Minister, Justin Madders. He said that, quote, a significant reason for the shortage was the government's failure to prepare properly and take on board warnings about PPE stockpiles. It certainly was one of the very early challenges that the government ran into throughout this whole pandemic, Roger.
Indeed. Meanwhile, what's going on in the rest of the world is having an impact here. We can't go a day without mentioning Brexit, and it seems we can't go a day without mentioning the president-elect in the US, Joe Biden. Now, he says he doesn't want to see a, quote, guarded border between Northern Ireland and the Republic. The president-elect told reporters he's already discussed the issue with world leaders.
We do not want a guarded border. We want to make sure we work too hard to get Ireland worked out. And I've talked with the British Prime Minister, I've talked with the Taoiseach, I've talked with others and talked with the French. The idea of having the border north and south once again being closed and require, it's just not right. We just got to keep the border open.
He's previously intervened in the Brexit debate, of course, warning that the breach of the Good Friday Agreement would threaten the prospect of a future US-UK trade deal.
Yep, so those are your other stories in the world of politics. Let's get back to the headline event, the spending review and the OBR forecast due shortly. Joining us to discuss all of this is James Smith. He's Research Director at the Resolution Foundation. James, I mean, what we're expecting to hear from the Chancellor today is very much a continuation generally of the spending theme, the recognition that now is not the time to be reining in. We're still in the middle of this. Does that sound to you like he's hitting the mark in terms of his priorities?
Yes, I think it does. So the key for him will be to in some ways form a bridge to the new world in which we have a vaccine. So the next few months are going to be tough, the government have said that, and they'll need to continue providing support. They've already outlined the job retention scheme, the self-employment scheme, so they'll be continuing to support incomes until March. But after that, the government will need to prioritise driving a really rapid recovery, so providing more measures to boost the economy. And we'll hear something about that today. So we'll hear about the government's investment plans and what it plans to do there. But really, all this will just push us towards lasting damage, a big jump in borrowing. And what we won't hear today is plans on how to fix that lasting damage to the public finances.
Well, that's an interesting point, because there clearly is damage. We keep talking about the vast amounts of money that need to be repaid. I mean, can you just walk us through how much in debt are we right now, and what are the prospects of that simply returning, I guess, organically when the economy recovers?
So the crisis so far has put the deficit on a wartime footing almost. So we are expecting to see the OBR say we're going to borrow something like £400 billion this year, this fiscal year, and that would be the highest, unprecedented since the Second World War. So absolutely huge numbers, basically putting the government's borrowing on a war footing. But what really matters here is the lasting damage to the economy, because that means lasting damage to the public finances. So the Chancellor shouldn't worry about that £400 billion. That will lead to a rise in debt. What you should worry about is the lasting damage to the economy, which the OBR previously estimated to be about 3%. And that means that the Chancellor have persistently lower tax take, persistently higher spending, and that damage he will need to come to eventually. But today we're expecting more on how he's going to support the economy rather than how he's going to face that challenge.
And on that long-term damage, what is the material impact of that for the man or woman on the street? I mean, we talk about all of this in economic and in theoretical terms. What are people going to feel as a result of this in the medium to long term?
So 3% of GDP is worth about £1,000 per family for the UK. So this is a big number. It's a big economic hit. What all that will mean is a rise in unemployment. We're already seeing that, but there's more of that to come, unfortunately. And, you know, eventually it will mean the Chancellor has to tighten his belt and rein in public spending. And we think what will happen at that point is he'll be forced to raise taxes. But the key thing is not to do that until the economy, until the recovery is secured and the economy is bouncing back strongly.
Now, there's been a lot of push, certainly from the union side, of course, in terms of the public sector workers not necessarily getting a pay rise. We don't know if there's going to be a pay freeze mentioned in what he's saying. But isn't this a battle over not much? Because at the moment, there is so little in the way of inflation that even not having a wage rise actually won't be that damaging to that part of the economy.
Yeah, so inflation is obviously very low. We're talking about relatively small amounts of money here. What I think matters more is the mixed messages that are coming out here. So talking about public sector wage restraint on the one hand, while also paying the wages of several million people through the job retention scheme, risks basically muddying the waters in terms of what the Chancellor is trying to achieve. Our sense is that he should be focused on delivering that rapid recovery in the near term and think more about how to repair the public finances and do that through taxes rather than cutting spending when the recovery is actually secured.
And what about the A word, austerity? We've heard time and time again from the top brass in number 10 that it's not going to make a comeback. I mean, the timelines we're looking at, it may not be on their watch, but is it something that we as a country should expect down the line as a matter of realism?
I think the tide is very much turned on austerity in the sense that, you know, after 10 years, it's incredibly unpopular. Spending has been cut in by an incredibly large amount in unprotected departments, and that just makes it very difficult to do all that much through further spending cuts. And what this basically means is there's a real dilemma for the Chancellor. So he can be the Chancellor of responsible public finances, making sure the deficit is low and the public finances are sustainable, or he can be the Chancellor of low taxation, a sort of traditional position for Conservative Chancellors, but he can't be both of those things. And that's really going to set up a difficult dilemma as we enter the sort of recovery phase and move into repairing the public finances in the coming years.
James, we've heard that he's going to put a lot of money in lots of different places, but what are the things that really would make a huge difference? Where does the money need to go? We know about the NHS, we know about education, we know about the police, we've heard even prisons possibly, and also the defence budget. I mean, isn't it a question of priorities in all this?
There's certainly no shortage of need. I think for us at the Resolution Foundation, the key thing is that if you put money in the hands of those most likely to spend it, then that will have the biggest bang for your buck in terms of how much it'll boost the economy. So the priority is to at least maintain the extra £20 a week on UC and keep people who become unemployed receiving those more generous benefits, because that's the thing that will have a bigger bang for the spending that the Chancellor is doing. But looking beyond that, he will need to do more in terms of boosting the economy. We're expecting him to announce more support for the long-term unemployed. He will need to do more of that through 2021 in order to minimise the rise in unemployment and keep the economy moving.
Bloomberg Westminster. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.